You're listening to the C to Z of Movies. My name's Colin. I'm the C. Joining me is Zijan, there's Z. But you know what else C stands for in this episode, Zijan?
Chili.
It is.
Controversy.
It is chilly here compared to Canada, where I've just come back from, which was...
it's chilly here compared to Canada, what?
Yeah, Canada... Well, not all of... Yeah, the bits of Canada I was in, which was Vancouver and Toronto, particularly, I think, Toronto. Its summers are quite hot and its winters are very cold. And it was still kind of in the summery bit. So I was like wearing t-shirt and shorts around Canada.
Oh, that's nice though. I like the kind of weather.
Yeah, it's lovely. And then I came back here and shivered away.
Have you had lots of poutine?
I had some poutine. Only once. I'll be honest.
That's not some. How is that some?
Some. I don't know. I had one poutine. Does that... I feel that doesn't make any sense. Like you had, if you said you had like some beans or something.
I guess so.
I don't know. If you're a Canadian listener, I'm going to really offend you because poutine, it's only okay, if I'm honest. It's fine.
What kind of gravy is it anyway? Is it just like...
Just regular meat gravy, I think. Probably pork-based, maybe? Don't know.
Yeah.
And then some cheese curds. I had a lot of Dairy Queen, actually. A lot of Dairy Queen ice cream, which is a North American thing. That's lovely. Bit of some pancakes, bit of maple syrup.
What else did you get up to then?
I ate so much. I saw the sights of Vancouver. So I went to Stanley Park, went to... that's in Toronto. Went to Granville Island, did a little seaplane tour.
Went on a seaplane. That's really cool.
Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, kind of flew like the circumference of Vancouver, the main bit of the city.
Wow.
To see it all from the sky. Yeah, no. Now, Zijan, you're an actuary like me, so you'll maybe appreciate this, that I have made a spreadsheet with every day broken down into thirds with the various activities you'll be doing at each point of each day.
I do that as well, Colin, yeah. So.
Glad to hear it. Yeah. I printed off two copies. Simon, my brother, who I went with, lost his copy within 24 hours of arrival.
Of course, yep.
Never mind. But yeah, no, Vancouver, I've not been to Vancouver before. It's a really lovely, obviously, relaxed vibe. And then Toronto, no, not at all. I mean, there's like a few signs in both languages, but no, both Vancouver and Toronto are very English speaking. You have to go to a Quebec or a Montreal kind of area for the full-on French, which is fortunate because I don't speak French really. So, well, I say really, I don't speak French. Whereas Simon speaks a bit of French, so he was enjoying reading the signs. Try and translate those. And I also went, as we'll come on to, a 3-hour movie and TV walking tour of Vancouver.
Did Simon enjoy that?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. And in Toronto, which I'm going to come on to, I don't want to spoil what we're going to do, so I'll maybe come on to it later. So, because today, Zijan, as you know, hopefully, we're doing our top 10 movies filmed in Canada.
Yes, apparently. That's the thing.
This is if you pay careful attention to our last episode, you will have heard us say it was going to be films in Vancouver.
You corrected me anyway. I said yeah, Canada. I said no, just nope. Specifically Vancouver.
I did. So. You were ahead of the game. We've expanded it to the whole country, and we'll come to that later. But that's not the only thing we're doing. We're also talking about the Oscar-winning film *The Apartment*. We're doing a quiz on the films of Steven Spielberg in the 2010s, and much. Much more.
Really? I was going to say, right, like, it's been 4 weeks since we did the last podcast.
Yes.
It's been a month.
And is there a month's
My
worth of news?
My goodness. The news is dire, isn't it?
I've got a few things here, but yeah, it's slim pickings.
Bad bones here.
Slim pickings. Some of the stuff that would not make it into a normal week, I think.
Exactly. No. It's just, again, those who do not know, we've mentioned this in past podcasts, people are on strike. Everyone's on strike. Actuaries cannot be on strike, but everyone else is.
No, we're still working hard. Well, I mean, I wasn't. I was on holiday, but you're still working hard.
Yes, anyone but us is on strike.
In fact, I was at the when I was in Toronto, it coincided with the Toronto International Film Festival, or some of it, which is usually an exciting time where all the A-list celebs are around the city, but they were all on strike. So there were. I did see one red carpet that had a group of Indian actors that I did not recognise. And apparently Sylvester Stallone was in town because he's got a documentary out, and I guess you're allowed to promote documentaries because you're not acting in them.
Yeah.
But yeah, otherwise, yeah, I'm a much quieter tiff than most years.
I mean, it's I mean, it's not just us anyway, right? I was going through all the movie news sites. Mm. And by golly, people are struggling to come up with news at this point. the amount of random pieces of news that I've been reading is like, you guys are struggling too, yes. Guys. I understand. I feel you.
It's a good job this isn't our career.
I know, right?
Yeah, tricky. Well, do you want to kick us off with whatever you've got?
Fine. What do I have? Netflix. They are making The Tweets from Roald Dahl. Mm. And that's coming in 2025. I think the guy who was behind Wreck-It Ralph, Phil Johnston, is overseeing the production of this. It's animated. For those who don't know who The Tweets are, they are the meanest, smelliest, nastiest people in the world.
Yeah, it's just
an amusement park of some sort.
Yeah, I think it's going to be probably a very loose adaptation because the book... it's quite short. Very short, right? Yeah. But obviously, Netflix spent a lot of money getting the rights to Roald Dahl. And there's one that's coming out next week, is it? Benedict Cumberbatch is in. I can't remember what it's called. I was talking about Henry. But I don't know whether that's a series or a film. Does this ring any bells?
Henry? No idea. I thought I know all Roald Dahl's
books. Yeah, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar.
It's probably one of the later books, right, that he's written. Because, like, I know his children's books back to front, but I've not heard of this.
Right.
It's probably one of those adult books, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, it's a short story. Sorry, it's a short film, in fact. The film itself is only 39 minutes long. And it's based on a short story written in 1977, apparently. But it's written, directed, and co-produced by Wes Anderson.
Okay. I may watch that.
Yeah.
It's only 40 minutes, right?
Yeah.
I'm all for 40-minute film movies.
Why not? Why not? But I think the Twits is the first full-length film they'll be making out of this deal. And good luck to them. Lando was going to be a TV series for Disney Plus based on the Star Wars character Lando Calrissian, as played by Donald Glover in the film Solo. But apparently it's now going to be a movie. This has been confirmed by Stephen Glover, who apparently is Donald Glover's brother and also will be, I think, writing it with him. And I think he's involved in Atlanta as well, I think. So Disney have not confirmed this, but Stephen Glover said it on a podcast sometime. So don't know whether it's a Disney Plus movie or whether that's a cinema's movie. We watched Solo for this, didn't we? Did we?
We watched Solo for this podcast.
Yeah.
We definitely discussed this because we definitely discussed your outrage at how Han Solo got his name.
Oh, goodness me. Oh, yeah, that was so stupid.
In detail. You're by yourself. I'll just call you.
Oh, man. So dumb. Donald Glover, I think, was probably the best part of that film. So it would be nice to see him again. I'm not up to date with the Star Wars stuff, but I have started watching Ahsoka, which is quite fun.
And you know as well as I do that I don't watch any of them.
No, fair enough. Will you watch a Lando film starring Donald Glover, do you think?
No.
Okay.
I have just zero interest in the Star Wars universe, man.
Would it make any difference to you if you knew that all the letters from the word Lando are in Donald Glover's first name?
No.
No.
Nope. Michelle Yeoh is in it.
Okay. She might be.
Then maybe I'll watch it.
Has Michelle Yeoh done Star Wars stuff?
No, but she's in Star Trek.
Ah, that was it.
Okay. Yeah. There's apparently going to be a Murder, She Wrote adaptation.
Have you ever seen Murder, She Wrote?
Nope, I have no idea.
You don't know what it is? All right. I have never... Actually, maybe I have seen bits of it, but it's kind of your classic weekday afternoon TV. Angela Lansbury played a detective / author, if I remember rightly. And it's kind of... When you were ill from school, you'd probably sit through a Murder, She Wrote. Some friends of mine are in an improv show called Murder, She Didn't Write.
Which is nice.
Pretty good. Good title. Very good show as well. But obviously, Angela Lansbury is no longer with us, so she won't be able to appear in it at all. I see you asking Brad if your second piece of news is a film you don't know anything about.
Exactly, Colin.
Yeah.
This is going to end. It's going to get worse and worse. So, there.
Ian McKellen is rumored to be returning as Magneto in Secret Wars. yeah, that's right. I'm already going to news that I saw on Twitter that some random person tweeted.
It's not called Twitter anymore, anyway.
Well, I'm calling it Twitter.
Which one is Secret Wars?
Come at me, Elon Musk. It's the last Avengers. It's going to be the last. It's the not the next Avengers film, but the one after, isn't it? So we're getting Kang Dynasty, maybe, and then we're getting Secret Wars.
Maybe.
I
mean, they kind of have to bring the X-Men in somehow, right? So
yeah, it's an interesting one because I think Secret Wars is going to be what we once thought Doctor Strange might be, was a kind of bring back everyone from all the previous franchises and films.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be great. But there's also rumors that Deadpool 3 is going to be a bring back all the old X-Men and see them off movie. So it's a little unclear. Like, if you're going to do a kind of big farewell to the Fox X-Men and then bring back Ian McKellen again, seems a bit... Why would you do that? So who knows? Yeah. It could just
He's not doing anything right now, is he, anyway? So
Ian McKellen?
Yeah.
I don't know. He might be on stage or something. Couldn't tell you.
Okay. my last bit of news. Oh, yeah. This is a very rubbish bit of news. Apparently, there may be a sequel to the film Troll.
I've got that as a piece of news as well.
Yeah, it's very sad. But apparently, it's the most popular non-English film of all time on Netflix. The first film, it got a record-breaking 103 million views in its first 91 days.
Yeah, I saw this. What is it about? I guess it's like a quarter of a year. Is that why they're going for 91 days? I guess it must be.
Good question.
Because that's a weird period of time. Maybe that's 3 months.
3 months, yeah.
What language is it in? You
know? Norwegian.
Norwegian, thank you. Yeah, I didn't see it. Probably won't see this one, but well done.
But it's here because we had all news.
But it's
because
news.
People on strike.
Oh, what I didn't point out when you said Murder, She Wrote is it's being written by Lauren Shuka-Blom and Rebecca Angelo, who apparently wrote Dumb Money, which is out in cinemas now, I think. Mm-hmm. What else have we got here? Oh, boy. I mean, this isn't exactly news. I just found it interesting. Have you seen the Aquaman 2 trailer?
Bits, I think.
Yeah, what I found fascinating is that Amber Heard is in it for about half a second.
Oh, yeah, and, I know that as well. Yeah, that I noticed.
Yeah, and I know in court she said that the various issues in her public life led to her being cut out of the film or having scenes cut out, which I think they've denied. But it does seem it's going to be very much a Aquaman and his half brother Orm film as opposed to an Aquaman and Mira film. Interesting. And the other thing, is that if we're going to get a book, again, called The Marvel Cinematic Universe, An Official Timeline, which is going to confirm for us the official timeline of the MCU, which I'm interested by, because I want to know whether they're going to come out and just say that Sony lied about the time difference when was it in Homecoming? There's one of the film where they just put a big thing saying 5 years later, and I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, okay. You can buy it, and you can let me know.
Maybe I'll flick through it in a shop or something. Fine, that's all the news we have. It's not our fault. And our next segment is To See or Not to Zed, the segment where we tell you, the listener, which films you've recently seen and whether you should see them or not Zed them.
Yep.
Now, Zijan, I've been on planes, so obviously I've been watching films, so what have you been doing?
Exactly. I've been watching the Wheel of Time series.
Okay.
As I told you.
You did.
And it's really good. But I've seen quite a few films as well.
Okay.
So, I can talk about two of them right now because we need news, and this is news, and this is filler. So let's fill up this podcast.
Fill up good, mate. Fill up good.
Yeah. So the first film I saw was Oscar nominee, and it was nominated for Best Picture this year, actually. Women Talking.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah, it's on Amazon Prime right now. It's based on a 2018 novel of the same name by Miriam Toews. And if you've not seen the trailer, and you should probably watch the trailer before you venture into watching this film anyway, it's about a group of women who grew up in a remote and isolated Mennonite, community, basically, and they have a history of where the men drug the women and rape them and get them pregnant. So these women, basically, at this point in time, at the beginning of the film, one of the men was caught and was brought into court. So all the men left the village and left all the women behind. So the women got together to talk about their future, whether they want to stay, whether they want to fight, whether they want to flee. So the three options there.
Okay.
And it's basically watching them debate this. So I know you share the same kind of sentiment as me when going to this film. Like, I mean, it's not exactly going to be the most pleasant of films to watch.
No, no.
The kind of premise, right? And I can say that it's not as miserable watching as I thought it was going to be, put it that way.
Okay, well, that's I guess that's positive.
Yeah, I went in there thinking it's going, oh, this is going to be bleak and dire and miserable. I'll feel so awful watching, you know. What I mean, like, the premise alone just sounds bad. And these women do not know how to read. They do not know how to write. They are pretty much illiterate. And they pretty much stay in this community. And, you know, some of them are even fighting for them to stay because, you know, reasoning behind, one of the reasons is that, you know, they'll go to heaven if they stay behind. Or one of them saying that, you know, maybe some of the boys are the victims as well.
Okay.
And this because they grew up in this kind of mindset and community, so they couldn't help themselves. How do I say this? It's not a bad film at all.
Okay.
It's like watching a debate. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
Because
not a lot of action.
Nothing. Yeah, not a lot of action. You know, because as I say, I imagine there'll be a lot of visceral flashbacks and stuff, but there wasn't any.
Okay. I mean, so, I guess that's probably a blessing in some ways, but
in a way, yeah. So literally women talking is what it is, really.
Okay.
So
and there's no men in the film, is that right?
There is Ben Whishaw.
Oh, of course, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so because the women can't read or write, they wanted someone who is able to take the minutes and pass down these notes to any future generations, basically.
Okay.
So they got one of the teachers of the schools there who has always been an ally to the women to jot down the minutes of it, basically.
That makes sense. Okay.
And to cause some conflict whenever he interrupts the women by providing suggestions and stuff.
Right.
But yeah. Well, it wasn't... It's not bad, but and it's not grueling to watch, and it's pretty interesting. But it's like watching a debate. So,
yeah. If
you like that kind of stuff, then sure, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's the first film I watch. The second film I watched was Greatest Days.
I don't know.
Also on Amazon Prime. This is the Take That Jukebox music.
Oh, that one. Right. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, the one with Aisling Bey. Is that how you pronounce it? Aisling
Bey. Oh.
Eileen B. She was a Taskmaster.
Yes. Yeah.
She's... So this is a jukebox musical, meaning that they basically take that songs and try to fit it into the plot of the story, which doesn't work.
Okay.
But the gist of it is basically four friends who have not seen each other for 25 years reunite after one of them wins tickets to a reunion concert of their childhood favorite band, which happens to be something like Take That, but not really.
Okay. So I've just looked up Aisling Bey. Aisling Bey.
Aisling
Bey. There we go.
Yeah. That's the one. Again, it's a good enough story. I think the four actresses are great, but it's basically the thing I hate about jukebox musicals the most is that the music does not fit anything. It doesn't
move
the plot along. It doesn't do anything to it. Suddenly you burst into singing a Take That song, but it doesn't. It's out of nowhere.
Okay.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. There is
classic,
no reason or rhyme to put that song there, but only just because. And it helps that they fantasize about this boy band they used to watch as girls, so the boy band can sing some songs that definitely won't fit anywhere else, you know what I mean? So part of that is like, oh, look, this boy band sings some Take That songs, so, you know, this is... It's fine. We don't have to fit it into the plot of the movie. You know, it's just like a side thing.
This is why I liked part of the reason I like Rocket Man is that I guess Elton John has got a much, much longer career, a lot of songs, and they kind of chose the ones that fit rather than we must crowbar in the hits. And if I even change the lyrics sometimes to make them fit more, was I guess take that, once they've had a long career, they've probably got 10, 12 hits or something that you need to get in. And
yes.
Then, rather than necessarily being able to pick from a huge back catalogue.
And a lot of it don't really work. Yeah.
I'll avoid that one then. Okay.
Only if you love Take That.
I can't say I love Take That. They've got some good songs, but I liked...
they appear in the film, as you imagine.
Is Rule the World in there?
It's
probably my favorite.
It doesn't fit in the story, which annoys me as well, but yeah.
That's probably my favorite Take That song, but I can watch it on the credits of Stardust if I want to catch it again. I'll give a couple of films as well then. So I watched the film Air, A-I-R, rather than H-E-I-R, which was directed by Ben Affleck and was about the designing of the Nike Air, the Air Jordan, rather. So this is the one where, so it stars Matt Damon, Jason Bateman, Viola Davis plays Michael Jordan's mother, Ben Affleck's in it, there's a few other stars. But Matt Damon is the lead, and he's basically saying we need to spend all our money on this rookie basketball player who's never played before, because we think he's going to be fantastic. And we just want to build a whole shoe line around him. I like this film. I think it works. I think Ben Affleck is a good director. It wasn't particularly kind of maybe memorable as directorially, but very kind of slickly done and kind of nice, easy watch. Where it falls down into two ways, I think. Firstly, I don't care at all about Air Jordans.
More you than it is the film.
That's
right?
Me, but I feel the shoe is probably a bigger deal in the States as well, because obviously basketball being a huge sport there, much bigger than it is here. But because it's talked about in like breathlessly as this like huge game-changing thing, which I guess it was, but I just don't know enough about shoes at all, really. I knew there was such a thing as an Air Jordan, but I didn't know what it was or how big it was. The other issue with it is that they decided basically not to show Michael Jordan. And it's not quite true. There is someone cast as Michael Jordan. I think he speaks maybe one or two lines, but he's usually seen like the back of his head, or if someone's having a conversation with them on the phone, they'll only show one half of the conversation. And it really kind of sticks out like a sore thumb when it's like, yeah, you're focusing on Matt Damon the whole time rather than both sides of the conversation. And I kind of get where they're coming from, because it's not a Michael Jordan biopic. And if you start putting too much of him in, it becomes too much about him, I guess. But instead, they basically, by having Viola Davis as his mother being in the negotiations and this really big thing, it kind of makes him such a really weak character, because it seems like his mum is just doing everything for him, which kind of is weird. So yeah, it's a fun watch. I think it's very well put together, but no more than that. And then the other one I mentioned, the film I saw at the Toronto International Film Festival. So I didn't see the premiere. It came out a week before I was there, but a week and a half. But it was still showing throughout the festival. So Simon and I went to see North Star. Which I hadn't heard of before, but and obviously it's not come out yet more widely. But it's the directorial debut of Kristin Scott Thomas. She wrote the screenplay as well, co-wrote it. And it's very, very loosely based on her life, I think. But it's about three sisters, played by Scarlett Johansson, Sienna Miller, and Emily Beecham, who I hadn't heard of before, who are going to their mother's third marriage. Her first two husbands died when they were still in their 20s, I think. So their first husband was the father of two of the daughters, and the second husband was the father of the other daughter. And they're all coming back for the wedding. To the third is played by James Fleet. It was nice to see James Fleet on screen again. And all sorts of things happening at the wedding. I would say too many things. so this film's got kind of middling reviews, and I think that's fair. It's not bad, but it's kind of, with this cast, you might expect it to be better than it is. And I think there's so many things thrown at it. It's kind of all these different revelations coming up, and kind of long bitten down complaints and arguments come to light. And you think, I kind of get it. It's not uncommon in films to have kind of a wedding as a point where lots of kind of things come out of the closet. I think if she'd had someone else, she did have someone else up on the script. Maybe she needs someone else on top of that to say, actually, put out this, and it'd be a lot stronger if you just focus on these things. I would say.
Is it drama?
I'd say probably, it is a drama, maybe dramedy, but it's more drama than anything else, I guess. There's some funny moments. Scarlett Johansson is playing English, and she's done that before. Girl with the Pearl Earring, she was English. The other Berlin girl. I think her English accent is not too bad. I seem to remember it being better than this. So when she, in her first scene, when she said, "Oh, bloody hell," and I was like, this is like the international way of saying that as an English person, because we don't say that all the time.
I think that if they want to start doing the English accent, that's the first phrase they'll say.
It seems so often, isn't it? So that kind of took me a while to go back. She plays a Navy captain, and is fairly compelling as that. I think Sienna Miller is the best in this. She's really good in this. Frida Pinto's in it as well. Let's see her again. Oh. So yeah, it's not a bad film. I'd say if it comes on streaming, give it a watch. But yeah, okay. It's I say it's getting middling reviews, and I think it won't be. It wasn't massively memorable.
Okay. So four films for
we did it
to choose from, guys.
There you go.
What a range.
We've not been particularly enthusiastic about any of the four, I'm afraid. never mind. But we're about to give you 20 more potentially, somewhere between 10 and 20 more films to consider.
I'm pretty sure it won't be 20 more.
Okay. As we consider the films of Canada, shall I just intro this a little bit by saying?
Yeah.
When I was, so I went to Vancouver and Toronto, famously Vancouver in particular, but both of them have a lot of Hollywood productions made up there. It's nicknamed Hollywood North. In fact, both cities, I think, claim to be nicknamed Hollywood North, mainly because it's cheaper. There's tax breaks and filming in Canada is cheaper than elsewhere. Vancouver in particular kind of can double for a lot of different places. So there's bits of the city that look like New York, there's bits that look like Boston or Chicago or wherever else. And there's a big Stanley Park, which is a big wood right next to the city. So if you want to film kind of city scenes and kind of countryside scenes, but only travel for 20 minutes, you can do that there. Both Vancouver and Toronto, and I guess the other cities we're looking at here, very, very rarely play themselves. There's a great YouTube video, which I recommend looking up, called Vancouver Never Plays Itself, which goes into that. But they, so I think only one of the films on my list, maybe two of them, is it actually set in Canada? Which I think if you live in these cities, it must be quite annoying. And watching a film, and it's like, hey, we're in New York. It's like, that's my walk to work. I recognise that street. That'd be a bit frustrating. So yeah, I did a 3-hour walk around Vancouver with a guy who's involved. Yeah, I think he's done a bit of extras work, a bit of acting. He's now working as a PA for directors. But one of the reasons I suggested expanding this to all of Canada is that he talked a lot more about TV than I was expecting, which we don't really cover here. So things like all the CW superhero stuff, it's pretty much all shot in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And also, what I probably should have guessed, is that films that are cutting corners by filming in Canada probably aren't going to be the best films in general. So there's some great ones there, but there's a lot of very low-budget stuff. And I think we'll come to the list, but most of the time, if you're a big budget film and you want to film in Los Angeles, you film in Los Angeles. Or if you want to be set in New York, you go to New York. You don't have to go to Vancouver.
It's not that bad, right? Like, oh, maybe I'm just Googling the wrong list here, Colin. Because, well, you told me that we were doing a top 10 yesterday. So I went this morning to Google films filmed in Canada.
Yeah.
And the list is pretty decent. Like, I think top 10. There's quite a lot of Oscar nominees and winners here, man. What the heck?
There are a lot of good films, but there's a lot more not good films. I went through lots of Wikipedia pages for this.
Oh, really? Oh, you did a lot more work than I did.
I also, and it'd be interesting to see your approach on this, I also didn't include the films that had only had a bit shot in Canada. So, yeah, so it might not be going on quite the same as, because I say it was quite a late decision to make this a top 10. But things like, I don't know, Titanic is in the list of films shot in Canada, but basically they did a little bit of shooting at the start and then went elsewhere. So I didn't count that, but if you did.
Okay, this is going to be a very awkward conversation then.
That's fine.
This will be a top 10 list of films shot in Canada by Colin and top 10 list shot in Canada adjacent by
me. Fair enough. I also mentioned that Rumble in the Bronx, a film I have not seen, but I've seen clips of, was supposed to be obviously in the Bronx. They filmed it in Vancouver and didn't bother like cropping out the mountains in the background. So it looks nothing like the Bronx. Also, Ryan Reynolds is a big hero in Vancouver. As you might expect, he's from Vancouver and he makes sure that films go there. So Deadpool films are there, for example. That's probably all I wanted to say. There's a bit more I'll say when I get to one or two of these. But we can do it in the list. Do you want to kick us off, though, and tell us which film that's got 3 seconds in Canada is...
My number 10 Canada-adjacent film is My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, it's shot a lot in Canada.
Cool. I've not seen it.
2002 romantic comedy film directed by Joe Zwick and written by Nia Vardalos. I think the sequels are coming out recently because I'm pretty sure I saw promotion of My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3 or something.
Was it a TV series or something? Oh, yeah. My Big Fat Greek Wedding 3 was released on September the 8th. Yeah,
there you go. It only came out recently. But the first film was really, really charming. It's a very, very sweet rom-com. And it's always nice to see interracial. It's not really racial, right? But yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
With different cultural backgrounds coming together, it's always fun. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Well, I've looked up. I can confirm it was shot in both Toronto and Chicago. So it seems to be largely shot in Toronto. You've nailed it. In Greektown, which is a part of Toronto that I didn't get to. I don't think. No, I didn't get to Greektown, so I can't confirm whether or not it looks like Chicago, a place I've also not been to. Cool. I should have said, it's our top 10, so we're giving points 10 to 1, and then we'll do the tops. Usually when we do top 10s, I also ask out for suggestions, but I didn't feel this was one that would work as suggestions, to be honest, so I haven't. Number 1 for me is the film Source Code, number 10 for me, getting 1 point, is Source Code, which directed by Duncan Jones and starring Jake Gyllenhaal. And Michelle Monaghan, I'm sure we've talked about it a few times before because it's a bit of a favourite of mine, where it's basically Jake Gyllenhaal is sent into what he's told is a kind of a time loop simulation type thing to find out who planted a bomb on a train. Again, much like My Big Fat Greek Wedding, it was set in Chicago but filmed partly in Canada, in this case in Montreal. So Montreal standing in for Canada, for Chicago. Must be actually too expensive to film in Chicago, I suppose.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah. It's I remember it not going down brilliantly at the time, but I've seen it a few times. I think it's a great film. Good twist.
I enjoy Source Code. I can't remember much of it, but I did remember enjoying it when I was watching it. So, yeah. Cool. My number 9 is definitely Canada adjacent.
Okay.
Because I'm pretty certain Montreal was used as a stand-in for various areas in France. So okay. Where do you think, what film do you think this is called?
Ooh, Montreal standing in for France. Mamma Mia. Huh.
No.
That's not France,
Mamma Mia's not even set in France.
Film set in France. I don't know, Tomorrowland. Mr. Bean's Holiday.
Yes, Colin. Those are my 9 favorite films of all time filmed in Canada.
Ratatouille.
Yes, an animated film.
What films do you love? Amelie? They're not filming that in Montreal, are they?
No, it's not completely filmed in France. It's not completely set in France, put it that way. That's why it probably doesn't count as well, because the parts where it's set in France is only the ones which are filmed in Montreal, I believe.
Les Misérables.
No, the entire film is set in France, Colin. I just said partly.
You did, okay. A film that's partly set in France.
Very small part in France.
No, I'm not going to get it. Go for it.
Yeah, just catch me if you can.
Okay. Yeah. Great film. Great film.
Very
good
film.
Let's have a look. Here we go. Filming.
No.
Los Angeles, California, New York City, LA/Ontario International Airport. There you go. And Quebec City and Montreal. I'm going to let you have it because it's three different locations, three different provinces, in fact. Oh, that's not just two provinces, but three different locations. Good enough.
There you go. I did my research, of course.
Sure you did. It's a great film. I didn't see it on the list. I don't think I would have counted that for my list, but if I did, it would be up there. Why do you love Catch Me If You Can, Zayden?
It's good fun, right? But, have you read the news recently that the author of the book said that the entire thing was a scam as well? It was a sham.
Yeah, I did hear that. Weirdly, I saw an interview with, I think it was with Tim Curry, many years ago. Like literally, I think maybe the same year the film came out, where he said, "Oh, the biggest thing about it is it's all made up." I was like, "How did Tim Curry know?" Like 20 years ago. There you go. They also filmed in New Jersey and Brooklyn. They got around this, didn't they? Wait a minute. What? Ontario International Airport is in California. What? Well, you still got Quebec and Montreal.
Yeah. I got two. That's okay. I get a passing grade.
Yes. What is it? Is it Ontario in California? That's confusing, isn't it? Next up for me is the film Molly's Game, which I think I spelled wrong here. Maybe not. Molly's Game, which is Aaron Sorkin's directorial debut and written by him as well, starring Jessica Chastain as Molly Bloom, who famously arranged several poker games and things with the Hollywood A-listers, among others, were just rich people, including some Hollywood A-listers. And things went awry, and she got taken in by the FBI, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think this is really good. I mean, I love Aaron Sorkin's writing. I think he's a solid director as well. He's directed a few things now. Strong performances all around. Idris Elba's great in it as well. And
very good film. Very good writing.
Yeah, he played good. And apparently filmed at least partly in Toronto, which I did not know until putting this list together. If only I'd known, I could have gone to whatever locations they use in Molly's Game. I don't think I've written down. So some of these I've also written down what the city stood in for. But this just, in fact, there is primarily, there you go, principal photography began, maybe it was all filmed in Toronto. There you go. Nailed it.
I wrote some other stuff as well.
Good man. It was
my number.
Sorry, I'm just looking where it's, I think it was set maybe in New York. There you go. Yes, it was set in New York City, but bits of Toronto look like bits of New York, apparently.
I mean, you can't really tell, can you?
As long as you cut out the CN Tower, you're probably fine. Yeah.
My number eight is Spotlight.
Oh yes.
Richard McAdams is Canadian as well, so he's in it.
You're scrounging around for points here. Right?
No, but it's filmed in Toronto. I think one of the former Sears building was used as the interior shots of the Boston Globe office. So that's why I wrote them down here. So I'm pretty sure that's correct.
Okay, the Sears building's in Chicago, though.
There's a former Sears building in Toronto, apparently.
No, there isn't.
I have no idea. That's what they told me.
Okay.
Yes, what I've been Googling, Colin. And then it was shot partially in Ontario as well.
Okay. I mean, the Sears Tower, which is now called the Willis Tower, is definitely in Chicago. But because Spotlight's also on my list, so I'm definitely going to count it. I apologize, Sijan. I apologize. There is a former Sears building in Toronto as well. How wrong I was.
See?
I'm so sorry.
Why would I lie when I don't do any research whatsoever?
I don't know. But they went all over the place in Toronto. Went to St. Basil's Church, apparently. They went to the University of Toronto. They went to Toronto Police Service Station. But yes, because some of it's one of these things, I guess, where they do what they often do is they do a kind of establishing shot of the actual locations. They do like an establishing shot of the Boston Globe or something, and then they'll film something like a bit different. So it was one of the things they were saying on this tour is that there's a scene in, this isn't on my list, but there's a scene in X-Men 3 where Angel kind of jumps out of a building. Mm-hmm. and swoops down and then lands next to the Golden Gate Bridge. And the building he jumps out of is in Vancouver and then obviously lands in San Francisco. Impressive.
Yeah, it makes sense though.
Next for me is a film that I must have mentioned before. A film that I absolutely loved when I was maybe 16 and then for several years thereafter, which is Three to Tango, the great Matthew Perry, half Canadian, the great Nev Campbell, fully Canadian. Shot in Toronto in various parts, including the Distillery District, which I've visited a couple of times. There is a great scene in a cafe. I dragged Simon along this time on holiday to the cafe where it was filmed, which is currently covered in scaffolding and kind of like big canvases, so you can't actually see it. But there is a picture of it on those canvases. So, you know, that's pretty good. Pretty good. I love Matthew Perry. I love Nev Campbell, actually. And so there's what I enjoyed immensely, and what critics gave 29% on Rotten Tomatoes, is Three to Tango, which again is set in Chicago, but filmed in Toronto.
Hmm.
Why can't anyone film in Chicago?
Well, speaking of Chicago.
Okay.
The film Chicago.
All right. Was
filmed in Toronto, and that's my number 7.
Was it really?
It was shot entirely in Toronto.
Goodness me. Wow.
I mean, if there was any ever a film that, you know, you think would be in Chicago, would be the film Chicago.
You think that would be the film? Yeah. Wow. That's hilarious. Tell us more about Chicago.
It's a musical with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Renee Zellweger as two murdering mistresses. Mm. Who sing their way out of the law, basically, with the help of the lawyer, Billy Flynn. It's good fun. I think it's one of the few musicals that works really well on a film. And actually, it works better on a film than it does on stage. So
does it? I've not seen it on stage.
It's not great.
It's a film I really enjoyed. We did it for Little Pack and Oscar, didn't we?
We did, yeah. It's good fun.
Yeah. Well, I can confirm that I have been to Union Station, a railway station that was featured in that film, apparently, and in lots of films. And in fact, Casa Loma, I might as well mention Casa Loma now. It's a castle very close to where I stayed in Toronto, actually. It's only a few minutes walk away from there, which was built by a guy called Henry Pelmet, I think, or Pellet. So it's not a particular, I mean, it's old as far as Canada is concerned, but not, as certainly from a British point of view, not an old thing at all. But it is features in loads of films whenever you need a castle. And so in the basement, they've got posters of the various films or some of the films that it features in, including two of my lists. So maybe I'll come on to them. But I went around Casa Loma, and if anyone there finds themselves in Toronto, I recommend a visit to Casa Loma. I think I'll try it off. But it also featured Chicago, apparently, filmed at Casa Loma.
Very funny. By the way, Colin, how much is Canada paying you for being, you know, their tour guide?
They're paying me one loonie, which is the Canadian nickname for a dollar, or at least for a $1 coin.
Okay, all right.
So, in fact, a $1 coin is nicknamed a loonie. Do you know what a $2 coin is nicknamed?
A toonie?
It is a toonie. Good work. next up for me is Spotlight, which we've already talked about. Great film. Mm-hmm. Also shot in Hamilton, Ontario, apparently. Didn't know that.
Number 6 of Canadian adjacent films.
Okay. It's Titanic.
It's Titanic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I put Titanic here.
I can probably guess one of the other ones that I threw out because it wasn't Canadian enough. But, I think the in Titanic that is in Canada, I think, is where they're looking for the wreckage at the start.
Mm.
So it's not even on land in Canada.
It's Canadian waters, okay?
We don't need to tell people about Titanic, do we? Everyone knows about Titanic.
Exactly, yeah. Fine. We can move on.
We can move on to my... Ooh. Did you start this list? Yes, you did, didn't you? I'm just trying to find out which one I'm here on. Mission Impossible 4. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which is, at one point was my favourite Mission Impossible. Then I rewatched it the other day and thought, the last act isn't as good as the first.
How much of the film is in film in Canada? Because Mission Impossible is globe-trotting, right?
It is globe-trotting. Various bits of it, including in the Indian scenes, are all filmed in Vancouver. I think three different... one was in India. I can't remember those, but three different countries, I think, are within a few streets of each other in Vancouver, according to this film. The Dubai bits, I think, are actually in Dubai. I don't think they built the Burj Khalifa in downtown Vancouver. But it's the only Mission Impossible film that has filmed there. But our guide had some nice things to say about Tom Cruise. It turned out later, I don't think he's actually interacted with him himself, but kind of heard on the network, on the whatever it is, that he was a good guy to work with. Because the guy he spoke to is I think at the moment working as a PA, or senior PA or something. So we'll have some contact with actors, but I guess there's also kind of a PA network where you can like, oh, this guy's a jerk, or this guy's really nice and talks to everyone, or that kind of thing. But yeah, several bits in that. I didn't actually look this one up because I was relying on our guide, although some of the stuff he said wasn't true. I think most of it was, but at one point he said that the Queen Mother and King Charles had come to a building, and he meant King George. So if he's getting that wrong, what else is he getting wrong? It's fine.
Did you correct him, though?
I didn't, actually. Yeah, so apparently Bangalore was represented in Vancouver. But in fairness, it did go to Budapest, Mumbai, Prague, Moscow, Chennai and Dubai. So maybe if I'd read that, I would not have included this. So, there you go. It's in. We're going to do.
My number five is filmed in and around Vancouver. It's Juno.
That almost made it on my list.
Yeah. Great script. Very funny. I'm pretty certain Elliot Page is Canadian, if I'm not mistaken. Is Michael Cera Canadian?
I was going to look him up.
Yeah, Michael Cera is Canadian.
Because I think he is, yeah, based on... I think he is. There he is, yeah.
Yeah, and Elliot Page is Canadian as well. So, yeah, two Canadian leads as well. Shot in Canadian movie, but apparently it's based in Minnesota. But, yeah, Elliot Page plays a 16-year-old teenage girl and basically dealing with their pregnancy. And it's a very, very funny film. Very sweet. Very good performances by everyone, really. Good casting.
Yeah, it's lovely, isn't it? We talked about it the other day. I can't remember why it came up. It was something. Maybe did we do a top 10 films beginning with J or something? Maybe we did.
Yeah, it's probably one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, that was... I've got five here in kind of honourable mentions. Maybe I'll come to them in a bit. But Juno was one of those. And I think Diablo Cody, who wrote it, and it was I don't know if it was her first film, but certainly her first one of note, has never really managed to quite recapture that again. She did Jennifer's Body, which I don't think was huge, and then a few other things, but kind of burst onto the scene and then faded a bit. But, hey, if a movie is good as Juno, why not? My next one is X-Men, the first one, which I mentioned Casa Loma. Casa Loma is with, or one of the places that the X-Mansion is filmed. So that was cool, kind of seeing these places where Wolverine ran down the corridors and all this. And in fact, they've got a whole waxwork section of stars from the various movies that are shot there. So they've got waxworks of Storm and Wolverine and Professor X. Although curiously, Professor X is standing in the waxwork rather than being in a wheelchair. X-Men, I go back and forth on which is my favorite X-Men film.
X2.
It's definitely not X2. I think for me, probably it's either this one or the other X-Men film I put on my list. But
Days of Future Past.
Spoilers, but yes, Days of Future Past. Yeah. But I think this is just such a good world-building film, introducing all these characters. And I think it's easy to forget, like, at this point, superhero films weren't a huge thing by any means. I think Spider-Man was around this time. In fact, Spider-Man was a year after, I think. And obviously you had kind of the Batman series had run through and all this, but without that first X-Men film, we wouldn't have the MCU, I don't think. And
I think that's fair.
That's a great film. And I know most people prefer X2, but I've always preferred the first one myself.
Well, you're wrong.
Okay. Fine. But yes, filmed in Toronto and also Hamilton and various other places in Canada.
My number four is Mean Girls.
Oh, was that in
which was filmed in Toronto, apparently.
Was it? I didn't realize that.
See, I don't know what list I'm getting all this from.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm sure you're right. I read through like thousands of films, so I'm going to miss some. Tell us about Mean Girls.
Mean Girls is, again, Rachel McAdams. Look at more Canadians.
There you go, so Canadian.
So Canadian. But anyway, it's about, it's a teenage comedy written by Tina Fey, and it's really, really funny, and lots of the quotes are still quotable now, people still remember them, and it's really good. It's just really, really funny about, given the title, a girl trying to fit in to this mean girl's clique, and then try to break them apart. It's really good. I don't even want to explain this. I'm pretty sure everyone's heard of it before.
Have you?
It's like Titanic.
Because we're getting a musical film, aren't we? Have you seen the stage musical?
No, it's not come to the UK yet.
Has it not? Okay.
No.
But Jenna Fisher, Pam in The Office, has been cast in that, apparently. You know what I realised literally a week ago, or within the last week? Regina George is like the Queen Bee. I'd never kind of connected Queen and Regina before. That was
clever, right? It's Tina Fey. Come on.
She knows what she's doing. Latin. Good work. But yeah, filmed in Toronto, standing in, apparently, for Evanston, Illinois. I can't comment on how much it looks like Evanston, Illinois.
But, I don't think anyone knows what Evanston, Illinois look like.
No. My next one is a film called 50-50, which it stars Seth Rogen,
Joseph
Gordon-Levitt, as you say, and Anna Kendrick and Bryce Dallas Howard. It's a film about a guy who discovers that he's got cancer and how he responds to that. It was written by Will Reiser. I thought it was written by Seth Rogen. Oh, there you go. I think it might be Anna Kendrick's best performance as the psychotherapist, I'll go with, that Joseph Gordon-Levitt sees. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is fantastic as well. I think it kind of breaks a lot of the kind of the cliches of films where people get cancer and people respond. Yeah, really, really strong. I'm just looking to see. It was filmed in Vancouver, but I don't know where it was based. So far, none of these. It was based in Seattle. I mean, Vancouver is very close to Seattle. I think it quite often. One of the things he showed us was like clips where you saw the Space Needle in the background, because like if you've got the Space Needle, people are like, oh, okay, Seattle, fine. You like this one as well.
No, I've not seen 50-50 before, but I really.
Oh, have you not? It's really good. Check it out.
My number three is Good Will Hunting. It's even though it's obviously shot, it's supposed to be in Boston, because both Ben Affleck and Matt Damon do the whole Bostonian accent, and they are Bostonian and they write based about where they are, etc. But due to financial concerns, apparently this was mostly filmed in Toronto, along with some real Boston location.
The classic, get a few shots of Boston just to convince people. And then, now, on, you know that scene in this where he says, do you like apples? I got a number. How about them apples?
Yes.
The guide who took us on the walking tour of Vancouver pointed out the place where that was filmed.
Really?
However, Wikipedia claims that it was filmed in Cambridge. So, who to believe? Who to believe?
My God. How much do you pay this guy to give you on a tour?
Oh, too much. Too much.
Oh, he's making a lot of money from this.
He's done well. And so it looks like University of Toronto was used. I think University of Toronto is used quite a lot, as is the University of Vancouver, to stand in for various universities. In fact, Vancouver, there was an interesting thing on this video, which I didn't see, obviously, was that... there's an interesting thing in the video about the films in Vancouver is that there's two universities there, but one of them is always used as a university, like Harvard or MIT or whatever else, and the other one is always used as like a kind of a military headquarters or something, just because it looks really like Brutus and stuff. But yeah, this film wasn't so this film was filmed in Toronto, and our Vancouver guide told us it was filmed there, so he's just making stuff up in the...
Wow,
it really, really made me doubt some of the stuff he told me.
Good on him, though. Good Will Hunting is a great film. Check it out.
Oh, it is a great film. It's a great film. Yeah. X-Men Days of Future Past is my number three. I've decided for today that it's my favourite X-Men film. Curiously, though, not in Toronto this time, although I don't know whether they used anything for Toronto, but mostly filmed in Montreal. I'm trying to think. The X-Mansion doesn't feature in it. No, it does, at the end. And you kind of see a wrecked version of it, maybe. But because of the way it works, the time it's set, you don't see a huge amount of the X-Mansion, if I remember rightly. So I guess Montreal is probably fitting in for Paris, actually, at times. Yeah, there you go. Great film.
It's okay. Not as good as X2.
Are you working up to put X2 in your list?
No.
Okay. That was filmed in Canada.
No, yeah, I know, but I didn't know. Like, when I was going through the list, it didn't appear in the list. So, yeah, unfortunately. My number two is Brokeback Mountain.
Yes.
It's filmed in the Canadian Rocky Mountains of Alberta. And so much so that the small town of Fort McLeod saw a tourism boom after the movie's release.
Have you been?
No, I've not been to Canada. Brokeback Mountain, Ang Lee, Jake Gyllenhaal, the late Heath Ledger play cowboys who fell in love with each other. Very beautiful film. Should have won an Oscar, but Crash somehow won it. There. That's my pitch.
Yeah, I mean, Crash wasn't great.
Crash isn't great.
Yes, you, when you think of like films shot in Canada, you don't tend to think westerns. But yeah, this one, Unforgiven, which was on, which didn't make it onto my list, but was at the, that was, that's a western film that was filmed in Canada. So I guess they've got the huge plains as well.
Just yeah, that's the thing.
Get there when it's not snowing, and you're fine. Although, is it snowing? Does it snow sometimes in Brokeback? I've not seen Brokeback Mountain.
I don't think so. No. But the scenery is gorgeous, though. Like, Rocky Mountains are so beautiful.
Canada's got such lovely... I mean, not so much the climate, the cities rather than the Rockies, but there's some beautiful scenery. Yeah. Second place for me is The Edge of 17, a film we've talked about.
Oh, I didn't know it was showing in Canada. I love this film.
Yeah, I didn't know until I looked this up today. It's such a good film. Filmed in, not in Vancouver itself much, but kind of around Vancouver in British Columbia, and Surrey, which Surrey is actually a county in England, but is also an area of British Columbia. I went to some improv in Vancouver, and there are various references to Surrey that got laughs. I didn't know why. I guess it must have some sort of reputation that made it funny. But there you go, Edge 17. Again, I can't remember where it was actually supposed to be, but they used various places in British Columbia, which is the province that Vancouver is in. Let me have a look. Does it go? Maybe it doesn't even tell us. I'm pretty sure it's set in America, at least. No, the Wikipedia's not going to tell me. Do you know that there's going to be a spin-off web series based on the film that got cancelled?
What, Asia 17?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Before I do my number one, do you want to do your honorary mentions first?
Oh, yeah. The Deadpool shot in Vancouver. So I've taken photos of the... You know that scene in the leaked bit? There's also in the film where he's sitting on the edge of a road and then jumps off onto a car to beat people up.
Yes.
I've got photos of that overpass.
Were you sitting on the ledge as well?
No, sadly. Good Will Hunting was on my list, actually. Juno was on my list. The Whole Nine Yards, another Matthew Perry classic, shot in Montreal and Quebec. And Fly Away Home, which is a really lovely film starring Anna Paquin, a very young Anna Paquin. And Jeff, I can never remember, Jeff Daniels, as her father. And they get geese to fly home. It's interesting. It's shot largely in Ontario. They also shot in Toronto, which is in Ontario. Interestingly, Toronto both plays itself and Baltimore in that film. So, have you seen Fly Away Home?
No.
Because I talked about it before. I think maybe it was in my top 10 F films or something. But I think you'd like it. Very sweet.
Hmm.
So those are my didn't quite make it films.
Well, my number one. And I'm pretty sure it's your number one as well.
Okay.
It's Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Yes.
Is it your number one, Colin?
It is my number one as well, yes. Yeah, such a great film. Love this film. This, I mean, it is my favorite movie of all time. So obviously it's my favorite major movie of all time.
Yeah.
And the only one on this list that's actually set in Canada, I think.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about Scott? We've talked about it before, but maybe
times already. Yeah. And there's going to be an animated series coming out on, is it Netflix?
On Netflix. So excited, Ian. So excited.
Yeah, with the actors providing the voices of their characters, basically.
Yeah, and, Edgar Wright's back to executive produce. Brian Lee O'Malley's involved. Yeah, can't wait. It's based in Toronto. Now, I dragged Simon around a Scott Pilgrim sightseeing tour of Toronto. I'll share the photos with you. I think you'll enjoy. It's written by Brian Lee O'Malley. It's the comics that he set in the place he grew up in Toronto, very near where we were staying, actually. And that's where they filmed as well. So they filmed at the places that are set in the comic book. So there's various photos of me holding up the comic book to match it.
I've seen some of them on Facebook.
It was great fun. The one that maybe was not a huge triumph is that I dragged Simon along to the Second Cup coffee house where Stacey Pilgrim works in the film. But I didn't check if it still existed. It has closed down. So I got a photo of me outside a cannabis store that was where the coffee shop used to be.
Oh, that's so good.
So I guess But yeah, I love this film. It's such a classic. We watched it again before we went.
I love this film so much.
So that's our top 10 then. There's only two films that we both mentioned, Scott Pilgrim and Spotlight.
Yep.
Which means it's not going to be close at the top of this list.
Nope.
Let's go for the... one, two, three, four. It's going to be quite dull because the top 10 is just going to be me repeating all these films that Chris said. So the top three, in joint second with 9 points each, of the two films we just mentioned in second place, Brokeback Mountain, Edge 17, and top with the maximum 20 points, the best Canadian film, it's Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I think people could have guessed that going in.
I know, right?
Well, we've taken longer than I thought we would, but let's still talk a little bit about The Apartment.
Mm-hmm. So The Apartment is a 1960 romantic comedy drama film directed by Billy Wilder with a screenplay he co-wrote. The film follows an insurance clerk who's played by Jack Lemmon, who in the hope of climbing the corporate ladder lets more senior co-workers use his Upper West Side apartment to conduct extramarital affairs. He is attracted to an elevator operator who's played by Shirley MacLaine in his office building, unaware that she's having an affair with his immediate boss, who's played by Fred McMurray, in the same apartment that he lives. The film was nominated for 10 Academy Awards and won 5, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Screenplay.
Cool. So we've talked about a Billy Wilder film before, which is The Lost Weekend, which I really liked. I can't remember if you did or not. I think you did. Have you seen any other Billy Wilders that you're aware of?
No, I only the ones that for this podcast, yeah. Really.
Because I've watched a few. Look at these. Double Indemnity is a really great film noir, quite different to his other stuff. Sunset Boulevard, Sabrina, 7 Year Itch, Witness to the Prosecution, Some Like It Hot. So he's a great director. And I have seen this one before. I think this was your first time seeing it, was it? But
yes, my first time seeing it. So, yeah, I actually quite enjoyed this film. Mm. I mean, once I got over the absurdity of the premise, which is, how nice is this apartment, man?
I mean, it's a very nice apartment for someone who works in a very menial job. Yeah, yeah.
But still, right? Like, come on, you have four guys wanting this apartment. Like, if you are quite senior management people, right, you can surely afford something better to conduct your extramarital affairs. Come on, guys. Like, not some random poor schmuck's apartment who needs to prepare, champagne and stuff, and you have to borrow the key and hide the key sometimes, which is just the most bizarre kind of system ever. But apart from that, I think it's really funny at parts. Mm. I think Jack Lemmon plays a very good everyday man. He's really, really good in this. I think Shirley MacLaine is really good as well as his love interest. I like that they mention actuaries in this film.
Yes, nice to get a few mentions in there. Yeah.
As you should do in an insurance firm. I would except at least one mention of actuaries. So no, I think it's pretty decent. It's pretty good fun. Some dodgy stuff about I'm not sure the best way of waking up a person from overdosing is slapping them really hard.
I think he'd pumped her stomach as well. I don't think it was just a slap. I think to bring someone around from being unconscious with slapping, I think that's done, isn't it?
Okay, I don't know that. I'm not a doctor. So
no, no, neither am I. This is not medical advice. If you're listening,
please. the bit where Jack Lemmon's character was saying, "Oh, I know so much about you," will come across as creepy these days. I think it's charm makes up for its.
Yeah, I just say the second time I seen it, I didn't really remember much about it apart from a very early shot. So when he's sitting at his desk, it's kind of this huge room that's just filled with desks. It's quite a famous shot to kind of demonstrate corporate drudgery, I suppose. And I also remember there's quite dark, kind of darkness in it, and it is very dark at times. But yeah, Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine, both so good in this film. I guess it must have been quite early for Shirley MacLaine in her career.
She's so good, huh? She's
really moving. Yeah. Yes. It's a film where the DVD case contains a shot from the final scene, which I guess is kind of a spoiler. So if you're watching on DVD, close your eyes when you're watching on that.
No one watches DVDs.
I watched this on DVD, Zijun. Another success. Next time is actor factors, Ajahn. Which actor are we factoring?
Susan Sarandon.
Ah, yes. Of Blue Beetle fame.
Yeah, that's the one film she's most well known for.
I do have on the subject, sorry, of the apartment. Firstly, is this a Christmas movie? It's got Christmas in it. Secondly, did you spot the reference to another film that we have already done in Look Back in Oscar?
What's that one? Yes, it is a Christmas movie.
Okay.
A lot of the main story beats happen during Christmas.
Yeah.
So yes.
Okay.
I think it's a Christmas movie. The second question, which film?
So when he's flicking through the channels to watch a film, they're just about to put on Grand Hotel.
Which is a
film that we've done in the Mac and Oscar.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that. Right, we move on to the quiz then, our final segment of the podcast, which is on Steven Spielberg films of the 2010s. Tijan, I will kick us off. Spielberg was nominated for a Best Director Oscar only once in the 2010s. For which film?
It's either Lincoln or Bridge of Spies. I'm going to go with Lincoln.
Correct.
My first question. One of the seven Spielberg films in the 2010s. Out of the seven Spielberg films in the 2010s, all of the music were composed by longtime collaborator John Williams, except two. Which films are they?
I don't know. So let's say BFG and Ready Player One.
Well, you got one of them correct. It's Ready Player One is correct.
Okay.
But it's Bridge of Spies.
Is it? Okay.
Because John Williams was ill during the production of Bridge of Spies. And for Ready Player One, because John Williams had conflicting schedules for that.
Okay. Question two. Which of these films was shot under the codename Dartmoor?
How do you spell it?
Dartmoor.
Is that one word?
It's one word. You're stalling for time here, is it?
Yes, I am. Oh, let's go for War Horse.
Correct. Wow. Okay.
What? Wait. Yes. 1 in 7 chance. Nice. Question two. It is said that Steven Spielberg became an avid fan of Tintin in 1981 after a review compared which of his films to it.
Oh, wow. Okay. 1981. So that's going to be a very early film. So did you all? I don't think that was anything like Tintin. Wasn't Clowners, maybe? Maybe E.T.? Was that before 81? I think that might be after 81. Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
No, he has once said that Tintin is like Indiana Jones for kids. So it's Raiders of the Lost Ark. They came out in
80. Yeah, okay. Come on, fine. Yeah, that was gettable. But it's nothing like Close Encounters. Question three, speaking of Tintin, it was written by Edgar Wright, Joe Cornish, and who else?
The Coen brothers?
No, good try. Stephen Moffat. He might know
that's,
from
Doctor Who, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And Sherlock.
Question three, what's the name of the Warhorse in Warhorse?
Oh, I'm going to do Johnny.
It's quite close. It's actually really close,
is
Colin.
It? Oh.
Yeah. It's actually really, really close. You've actually got... I'm quite impressed, actually. It's like, wow. It's Joey.
Oh.
I was like, oh, wow. It's quite impressive.
Question four. Who did Penelope Wilton play in the BFG?
Penelope Wilton. So I know it's not the main character. I don't know any other characters in the BFG apart from the girl and the BFG, who's okay. voiced by Mark Rylance. So, the girl's mother.
No, Queen Elizabeth II.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. They met the Queen in the end. Mm. Yes, you're right. Yeah, that's right, that's right. Question four. What are the team of pop culture experts that help Sorrento hunt for the Easter eggs in Ready Player One, why are they caught in the movie?
I think I've seen this film like 3 times for some reason.
Yep.
So I definitely should know this. Oh, it's an abbreviation of something. That's not the team actually. That's just, there's like people who look for things are called something. No, I'm not gonna be able to get it. Steggers.
No, so there are egg experts, so oologists.
Okay, I didn't know that. Fine.
Yeah.
Speaking of Ready Player One, it centers around the Oasis. Oasis, yes, is an acronym. Now, I'm not going to make you say all 5 words in it.
No.
I want you to give me any one word that is in the acronym Oasis.
So that's so kind.
Just one word.
The last S should be, is either simulation or simulator. Simulation. Simulator. Simulator. Let's go simulator.
Simulation, I'm afraid.
Oh my. Dang it.
Oh well, you've already won, so never mind.
What's the entire word?
Oh, it's ontologically anthropocentric sensory immersive simulation.
Dang it.
It would have been harsh to try and gauge all of that, but
yeah. My last one is, in which film did Sawyer and Sasha Spielberg, Steven's children, appear in as cameo?
Oh wow. Was it the BFG?
No, they're quite old. They were in the post.
Were they? Well, there you go. I got 0 correct on Steven Spielberg films in 2010s. It's embarrassing, which means you win 2-0.
Yay!
What are we quizzing on next time?
Paul Thomas Anderson films.
Great. And what is our main topic for next time, Steven?
I was going to ask you this before this call.
Okay. Is it the film Dumb Money?
Oh, yes, it is. It's the film Dumb Money starring Paul Dano.
Excellent. We've gone longer than I thought we would. And we will see you then.
Bye.